Thanks for Coming, the sex ed you wish you'd had. Mijn naam is Anna Mara Jansen en bij Thanks for Coming bespreken we alles wat je altijd al wilde weten over seks en seksualiteit. Iedere week ga ik met een opwindende gast in gesprek om mythes te ontkrachten en feiten te verspreiden. De clitoris is geen knopje en libido bestaat niet. Van seksueel plezier tot slutshaming, van sextoys tot je stoutste dromen. Let's talk about sex.
This episode will be in English because my guest today is Jessica Staal. Or should I say, Vanilla Cool Dance. Jessica is the founder, creative director and cartoonist behind her taboo-breaking comic account Vanilla Cool Dance about sexuality, dating and relationships. One of the things my Dutch listeners can know her from is the King's Day campaign, A True King Knows Who Comes First. Jessica, welcome. How are you?
Good. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So you're doing a lot of other things too. Would you explain a little bit about the work you do? Last week you were in Cannes.
Yes. So I am the creator of Vanilla Cool Dance, and that's of course how you and I know each other. So yeah. I've been drawing cartoons about dating, sexuality, and relationships for I think around 6 or 7 years now. And I've built a really amazing community on Instagram all over the world. And that's just been such a source of inspiration for me. And in addition to using cartoons to break taboos, I also do it through my work as a creative director. So yeah. I support brands, agencies, and organizations with campaigns aimed at opening up conversations around the things that we're uncomfortable talking about.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, we will definitely dive into all those things, especially the taboo breaking and sexuality. But first, we always ask the question, how was your first time?
Yeah. How much time do I have? My first time was very fun, memorable, very iconic. I had just graduated high school. And I was seeing somebody who was in college and he was home for the summer. Mm. And at the time, my cousin was staying in our house. So she was sharing a bed with me that whole summer. And there was this one weekend where she was out of town. And I was like, this is the moment.
You really planned it.
I really planned it. And but at the same time, my parents were having renovations done. So they were also in the bedroom next to mine.
Yeah,
so it was a very unconventional living arrangement for this summer.
Yeah.
And so my partner at the time, I probably wasn't using terms like partner, but the guy I was in love with at the time,
yeah.
I snuck him into my room and we started having sex. And I couldn't tell you much about the actual intercourse itself, but all of a sudden we hear a knock on the door and my mom saying, why is the door locked? And then me pushing him off the bed in my robe, opening it, saying, oh, I didn't even realize it was locked. And she was like, okay, good night. And then I shut the door. And then we're like, yes, got away with it. And then we had sex on the floor.
Wow.
To finish it. And so not the most comfortable, but pretty funny. And then afterwards, in the most American way, I remember we were lying there and we thought, oh, shall we text our friends and sneak out and go to the Tasty Diner for milkshakes and burgers?
Wow.
And so, yeah, so high school.
So a high school
so
movie.
American.
Did you climb out of the window?
No, we should have though. Yeah. Because we should have though, because at the bottom of my stairs in the dark was my mother sitting there, just in the pitch dark, saying, "What do you think you're doing?"
No.
So she knew that I was not being truthful with her, and she waited until we came out of the room, and then. He fled.
I didn't see this coming. I already pictured you drinking milkshakes with your friends
so
during the night.
No milkshakes were drunk.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so my mom was really not pleased.
No.
And she also didn't like the guy, to be fair. So that made it worse for her energy.
Yeah. And do you think, was she mostly not pleased about the sex thing or more about the lying or about the guy or?
The lying.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I had, no, because when I had asked her, where did she want? Because the problem was that I wasn't allowed to have boys upstairs.
Yeah.
And when I said, where was I supposed to have sex then? She said, I don't know. It's not my problem. Get creative. So I think it was more on the lying and the sneaking a boy in my room than on the actual sex.
Yeah.
Because she also gave me money for a vibrator. So,
wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to that later.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because you know that this is a very, typical Dutch comparison that parents in the US, they say, well, you can have sex wherever, but not under my roof. And that in the Netherlands, actually the opposite, where parents are like, okay, do it in our house because then you're safe and then we can put the condoms like in the cabinet in the bathroom and stuff like that.
So
this is like
sense.
This is always said about
so funny.
The difference between Dutch and American parents. Because where in America was this actually? Where did you grow up?
I grew up outside Washington, D.C. in Maryland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you always live there?
Yeah. Like growing up?
Yeah, growing up. Yeah. 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 Oh, but this is such a good story.
Yeah.
And did you, like, were you in touch with the guy?
Yeah, I think
that?
We spent the whole summer fucking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
so
lots
for
of
you,
sex.
It was actually really successful.
Yeah, it was a very successful first time experience.
Yeah. But then not in the room.
Hmm?
Not in your house.
Not in my house. That was less successful.
So you got
creative.
Oh,
yeah, we got creative.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, yeah,
so
exactly.
Actually...
At the beach, in the laundry room. Yeah, we got creative. We followed my mother's advice.
Yeah. So funny. Does she know?
What?
Does she know?
Now she knows.
Now she knows. Hello. Hello, mom of Jessica. Oh, this is great. And you said, well, we started having sex. And did you already have kind of a clue what is sex? Or because usually when we say the first time, people think about the first time of penetrative sex.
Yeah.
How do you think back with everything that you know now?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely put penetrative sex as being losing your virginity.
Yeah.
So that was how I viewed it. I wish I could remember it better. Like, I only remember the funny bits, like the bruised knees and the... and the falling off the bed, this kind of stuff, not necessarily how...
Very playful, actually.
Yeah, how it felt.
Yeah.
So I can't remember the actual experience of it, but of course I had, or not of course, I had done other sexual acts before that.
Yeah. And how was your sex education?
I feel like I was really equipped to give a blowjob.
Oh, how come?
I just think growing up in the media, that's like, was kind of the education for women was on pleasing their partner.
Yeah.
So I don't think I was actually educated necessarily well in schools. I definitely don't remember learning anything about female pleasure.
Mm.
I definitely remember somebody being shamed in high school or middle school for getting fingered.
Oh.
Versus like, an act that was about female pleasure was more shamed than an act that was about male pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think it was the most robust.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was also taught, I mean, amazingly by my mom to take my pleasure into my own hands.
Yeah.
But I think as amazing as that was and great advice, and I definitely feel like I took note, I don't know if I – it took me a long time to learn to rely on my partners to provide pleasure.
Yeah. Well, but it's already really interesting that your mom was, did she speak to you about this or did she?
That was after she caught me.
Oh, yeah.
The day after.
Yeah. But take pleasure in your own hands. That's really amazing.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
Many parents will never mention this.
Definitely.
Maybe nowadays a little bit more, but yeah. Do you know why, like, was that a topic?
I think that when she was younger, actually her and her sisters went together to get to the sex toy shop.
Oh, great.
So I think it was probably when they were a bit older, but I feel like it was like a fun family thing.
Yeah.
So she wanted to pass that.
Yeah. Actually, my mom gave me a vibrator or an voucher for the male and female shop.
Yeah.
They're also one of our sponsors.
Love
and
that shop.
When I turned 18 and then I could search... for something nice in the store.
Yeah, it's such a nice gift.
Yeah, but she didn't. I mean, she gave me that, and I don't know. I don't really remember. Maybe I was a bit awkward about it, or like, I don't really remember that we also spoke about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like, here, you have this. Good luck.
Yeah.
And then I went with a friend.
Nice.
But it was definitely normalizing it a bit.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, just the
and
fact that she
toys,
opened the door to it.
Totally. Yeah, and that it existed. I mean, I didn't know that before, I think, before I turned 18.
I don't think... I knew about the shower head, but not yet
toys. Yeah. Yeah, but more those things and not that they're actually toys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, who can give you great pleasure.
Deze aflevering wordt gesponsord door Cupido. Bij Cupido vind je een heel gevarieerd en vooral uniek aanbod aan seksspeeltjes en andere intieme wellnessproducten. Ben je op zoek naar een leuk cadeau? Ook dan kun je bij Cupido terecht. Want naast womanizers, buttplugs en glijmiddel hebben ze ook mooie kaarsen, lingerie en erotische spellen. En nog veel meer. Cupido heeft zowel een webshop, cupido.nl, als de mooie en gezellige Cupido Store in de Winkelstraat in Leiden, op de Haarlemmerstraat 16 om precies te zijn. Cupido wordt gerund door moeder en dochter en de open uitstraling die je welkom heet zie je in alles terug. Neem dus vooral een kijkje op de webshop en ga gezellig langs in Leiden. Met de code podcast10 krijg je 10% korting. Ga voor de link en de code naar de show notes. Yeah, and your dad, was he in the picture in this?
Yeah.
Like, oh, did he...
He was not sitting in the picture with this conversation.
No. I think that's also pretty common. So then, fast forward, Vanilla Cool Dance.
Yes.
What is it? Okay, maybe let's start. When did you think of this for the first time?
Yeah. I moved to the Netherlands without a job.
Yeah, about 7 years ago?
And almost 9 years now.
Almost 9?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
And I had been working at ad agencies in the past. Yeah. And I moved here without a job. And I was living in this 17-person university house that I, like, convinced the students to let me stay in their spare tiny room.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great. Oh, yeah. You got creative again?
Yeah, I got creative. It's my theme. And I thought I would be there just for a few months while I found a job, but it took a lot longer. So I ended up being there for about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
And I started to be really embarrassed about my situation. I was in my mid to late 20s and unemployed for so long and living with 17 housemates.
Mm.
And it was starting to look a bit depressing. I was also in a heartbreak. Mm. And I remember I was trying lots of different creative outlets. So at one point I tried to actually learn how to draw, like, well.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't stick with me. And then I played a little bit with typography.
But you didn't do any of those things before that?
No, I mean, no, not. Whoa. I mean, I'm an art director for a career, but not necessarily an illustrator.
Yeah.
And then I took a Skillshare class, actually, by Mari Andrew. And it was about journaling a little bit, ways to journal your life through cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that day, I decided to draw every day for a year and turn all of my funny, embarrassing, awkward, cringeworthy moments into a more empowered story. Or at least one with a lot of self-deprecating humor at first. And so then my character was born, and I immediately started posting from the very first day. And it quickly took off. So I think it was only a few months after I had started, like 3 months, that the Huffington Post picked it up.
Yeah.
And then it kind of just grew from there.
Yeah. And how did it feel to – because it's also really personal.
Yeah.
It's really about your own life. How did it feel to put it out there?
Totally fine. I don't know. I've always been – I think it helped that I started it from a new account, but it was never anonymous. So but to have a fresh space where people could opt in to view it if they wanted to or didn't need to view it if they didn't want to, I felt totally safe. It's really my safe space, that account.
Yeah. And has it been like that until now? Safe space?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes after a breakup, I feel a bit uncomfortable with it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because it's, as you say, you know, it's very personal what I'm drawing about. And so sometimes that's the only time when I'm like, ooh, it's a little intense knowing that somebody you dated out there while you're suffering through heartbreak, and maybe they are too, can like have this connection to you.
Yeah. Because you have actually a lot of communication with your followers, huh?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you ask questions and then you get so many responses and then
yeah,
you share
really
them
nice.
Too. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So ever since the very beginning, so I think even the first month, I've been doing Your Story Sunday. So every Sunday I ask a question and then the followers share and then I share the responses. And it can be about anything like the weirdest kink or the best green flags or experiences with gaslighting, experiences with sexism, funny sex stories, worst dates, best dates, advice you wish you knew when you were younger.
Yeah. And are there a few examples that you think of that you will always remember or that you'll always be like, wow, that's a good one?
Yeah, there's always one I refer to because I guess it's the top of mind one for me, which is, so I'm sorry because every podcast I've ever been on has like the same story. But I had once asked about kinks, and this person wrote in that their ex used to put a sheet over their head like they were a ghost and would masturbate to her mourning his death.
Whoa.
And I and then also armpit licking was a big theme.
Okay.
So then I also had my boyfriend at the time. We tried it too.
You tried it too?
Yeah.
So you also get inspired sometimes.
Of course, yeah. I'm also like, okay, if five different people submitted armpit licking.
Maybe let's try.
Maybe there's something here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and people really share personal stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you, definitely. I mean, of course, now they know you, so they know that they won't be outed or mm-hmm. that it stays anonymous mm-hmm. if they, yeah, it's always anonymous. Huh?
I share it anonymously, yeah, but always. There are, like, I see who submits
it. Of course.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's also, I think, one of the things that they really feel a relationship with you.
Yeah. I think probably. So. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah,
yeah,
well,
it's very special.
I think, yeah, I think that must be the case.
Yeah, it's
because
really
otherwise
nice.
You're not sharing that those kind of personal
yeah,
things.
Yeah,
and do people from all over the world, share?
Yeah,
or
everywhere.
Is there parts of the world where you feel like I would like to be a bit more present, online present?
Oh, interesting.
There?
It's a little bit difficult to say because I don't necessarily know where everyone's sharing is coming from, but I do know that a lot of my audience. We have America, UK, Netherlands, Australia, also India. A big Indian population mm-hmm. follows me. So a lot of different cultures, which is really, really nice.
Really nice.
Yeah.
I think you could probably do very interesting research if you ever wanted to.
Yeah,
Because you have so many different people.
I know. We should talk about that later because I know I feel like later. Such an opportunity to conduct surveys and...
Yeah.
And
you sort of already do it in a way with the
Small
Story Sunday.
Yeah,
still. Yeah, and other stuff because there's so many. I think for listeners, it's nice to hear maybe a bit more examples of what you get, what they answer on the.
Yeah, well, yesterday I put up the funny sex incidents, and there's a lot of animal themes.
Yeah.
So the dogs.
Or licking, the,
licking the butt, or the balls, or the cat's nose. Like, all of a sudden you feel it on the balls.
Yeah.
So animals getting involved. You know, I think it's very interesting how much shame there is about pleasure and about the sex and embarrassment. So there's a lot of things that people experience. Everyone has these insecurities. Yeah. I think it's more just important to know that whatever you are insecure about, I can give you thousands of women who are insecure about the same thing or thousands of men that are insecure about the same thing. So just by seeing how many people share that helps to normalize it.
Yeah.
I also love, I did a post where it was like, oh my God, somebody said, it was share your sexual musings. And one of it was, wait, can he see my asshole when he's, like, fucking me from behind?
Yeah.
And I made a cartoon about it. And then also in that, it's, like, all these men also being like, yes, we can. We're just trying to figure out, like, if we can stick our finger in it. We love it. Like, it's like we went to Disneyland. So it's also all this, like, it's funny but also positive reinforcement that it's okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah.
And also since you have many followers, a lot of people will see it.
Yeah, it's super nice that
both
all genders are interacting, which I think is really cool.
I think that's really cool too, especially because I think in our field of like sexual health, sexuality, taboo breaking, more real sex ed, it's usually still a lot of women
or
vulva owners who are involved. And that's such a shame,
actually,
talking about shame. how come, what do you think, what's with the shame and sex?
I think it's just the lack of talking about it. So nobody knows what's normal or not.
Yeah.
You know, if something embarrassing happens to you and you haven't heard about it before and you don't have a place to go. I mean, growing up in our generation, there was very few places you could go. You just tuck it away and never talk about it again.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that 10 other people have had it, 20 other people, 1,000 other people have had the same experience.
Yeah.
So I think it's this that we don't share. And then the second that we share it, it becomes normal and less scary and less embarrassing. I mean, you also see it with like erectile dysfunction in men people with the penis, that – I think they would rather say a million different things like, oh, a condom doesn't feel good or I'm really good at pulling out versus just saying that they maybe have a barrier to staying hard or getting hard and they want to talk about it with their partner. And if only they knew how many people have the same, the same, like also have this struggle, then it would become more normal. And then people would feel more safe to communicate it with their partner. And then they'd have an actual honest conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is so true. I once had a sex partner and he sometimes had problems with his erections, like actually most men do. And then he just shared it with friends immediately. He came to me and was like, oh, yeah, this is very normal. And in the beginning, I had this very also stereotype reaction where I felt like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not.
Exactly.
Maybe he doesn't like me anymore. Maybe, oh, maybe I'm not hot or sexy or blah. And then he just spoke with friends about it. And he was like, no, Anna, this is very normal. It just happens all the time. It's just maybe because I'm a bit stressed about work. And I was like, okay. So it got like all the tension off our sex. And actually it was solved after that because there was no tension again anymore. And when it maybe happened, I don't know, one other time too, or maybe a few other times, then I would always feel like, oh, okay, but maybe, you know, someone's just stressed or feels like, oh no, I hope this is not going to happen. And then of course it will happen.
Yeah.
But I was so impressed by how open he was about it. And I always kept this in mind, like this is so important to speak about these things too.
Yeah. And to just have a bit of confidence and knowing.
But also what you're saying about opening up and sharing already normalizes.
Exactly.
And that's sort of, I always think this is so easy. And why don't we do it? Because of the shame.
Yeah, and because your partner could also shame you.
Yeah.
So it's like, first you have to find a source that validates you.
Yeah.
So I hope that when people come to my account, they feel seen and validated.
Yeah.
So that when they do say to their partner, oh, you know, I have sometimes trouble getting hard. Or, oh, you know, I have pain when I have sex, or I have herpes and this is what this means. And if their partner then shames them for it or makes them feel shitty or like it's their fault or they're broken or there's something wrong with them, I hope that then they know, oh no, because Vanilla Cool Dance and billions of other people have said that actually it's normal. And so you're the asshole.
Yeah. You're an asshole. Talking about assholes again.
Yeah,
this is so true. And it's great that this account is there because it's not just about sex. I mean, you're just mentioning pain. This is also something that you draw about.
Not yet. I would love to work
but
with the pelvic.
But you do draw about the clitoris and about, but not about pain.
Like not necessarily pain specifically.
No.
I mean, not yet, but I will because I do want to talk about vaginal pain. And so now I would love to work with the pelvic people at one point.
Yeah,
that would
be
a really great partner.
Yeah.
But I talk about other things as well, like bodies, also relationships, just relationship dynamics and how to have healthy relationships, communication, this kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, and also the importance of female pleasure.
Definitely,
because that's, of course, that is a bit in all my episodes of, maybe... bit boring now for listeners, but that female pleasure is so important and that you also draw about that. I mean,
every part of sex.
And the whole concept of a true king knows who comes first. I mean, I know it's from last year, actually, but it's so amazing and it really hit people, right? Because how do you come to an idea like that?
Yeah, so that one was... We're talking about the street art campaign that I've done for King's Day. I knew that King's Day was a holiday where people are out drinking, flirting, and maybe trying to get laid.
Yeah, definitely.
And I had just been learning about the orgasm gap. So all I kept thinking was, oh, my God, our queens are getting royally screwed.
Yeah.
I need to help them. I need to help our queens on King's Day.
Yeah.
So the idea was pretty fast, I think, for the A True King Knows Who Comes First. I think the line I had almost immediately.
And how does it, like, are you in the shower and it just comes to you, or do you go and sit on a table, or do you go to a cafe, or how?
Depends. So this one came really easy. This one was on a walk. I was on a walk with somebody and I was like, oh, it would be great to do something for King's Day. Bam, the idea was there.
Great.
The second year it was about toys. I think that took me months to like get I had like 20 different illustration versions of it before I ended up on the final one. So it really just depends. The last one I did was A True King Always Has a Royal Guard, which is with condoms.
Yeah.
And I also kind of had the visual and the headline for quite some time. And then at the last minute, I'm like, he needs a boner.
Yeah.
Or no, my friend was like, he needs a boner. And I was like, okay, I'm afraid, but yes, we need to put the boner in.
Yeah. And with the condoms, did it also, because I think research had just came out in the Netherlands that people are using less condoms.
Yeah, so condom use had been going down. That was why I had decided to tackle it this year. And also cases of gonorrhea had gone up. And also studies showed that the youth were looking for better sex education.
Yeah.
And nobody has done safe sex in a sexy way. So I wanted to do it in a fun way that they would laugh or get and engage with.
Yeah, and feel like, oh yeah, a condom is a cool thing.
Yeah.
Instead of, that boring biology class where we have to put a banana and a condom, condom over a banana.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, like the condoms look great and
You can show them playful. Because people can watch on YouTube.
So these are the condoms. So it's with the king with his little boner poking through the banner that says a true king always has a royal guard, and he's holding a condom. And this is super nice, and I worked with Royal Intimacy, which is like the most perfect condom brand name to work with royal day.
So good. Yeah. And the other one is also here. So, but that's from 3 years ago then.
I did it also I redid it this year too. So a true king knows who comes first. The king going down on the queen.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I have never had so many messages from people saying that their kings performed after seeing that.
They did.
Yeah. So, and I also got a feedback that said every house needs a poster in their window because somebody said that their neighbor had one of the posters. And so every time she brought a guy back to her house, she would always be like, oh, look at this cool art poster. And then they would go down on her.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so great.
That was really funny to hear.
Yeah. And I think you also have a drawing about the fact that, or it's on your website, the fact that most women actually do not orgasm from penetration alone.
Yes.
Yeah. When did you make that? Or how did you make that?
I wonder which one that one was. But I think I had one where it was like, why is it called foreplay?
Yeah.
When for so many it's the main show.
Yeah.
And so I mean, just so many aspects of female pleasure.
Yeah.
And I think it's like first you need to understand that your pleasure is valid. And then you have to learn how to have experience pleasure.
Yeah.
And then you have to learn how to communicate about it. So there's so much work that has to be done to get people feeling confident in this space.
Yeah. And do you have any maybe advice for people who are listening now and who think, okay, I would agree maybe that my pleasure is valid, and then what?
Yeah. I think first you have to get to know your own body. Yeah. So I recommend everyone go home and masturbate and learn what you like and what you don't like, and there's so many different toys. Maybe one's not the right one for you, but maybe a different one is. And then get comfortable practicing communicating it. I think sometimes things that can help are the card games where you can play to, like, sexy card games to ask each other questions. Yeah. Also just being really curious. I think if you're genuinely a curious person and ask your partner what they're into and can start a dialogue that way and approaching it with curiosity. Because I would say in the beginning, especially during times when I was single, when I realized that my pleasure was valid, I used to get really angry. And so if I felt like a guy wasn't prioritizing my pleasure, I would get a bit defensive or a bit combative. I'd be like, do you not care about my vulva, or like my pleasure.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
And that's not really a way to call people into the conversation. And so now I use a lot more questions or positive reinforcement because I have learned that, you know, if women are pushing away, or if somebody with a vulva is pushing away their partner, you know, time after time because they're worried they're taking too long, that maybe the partner stops initiating on new partners. Yeah. So, like, I've started to be a bit more understanding as to different reasons why this can happen.
Yeah. And do you notice any change with your different approach?
I'm going to be honest. I feel like most of my best partners, we've probably had chemistry and equal pleasure has been in the mix
in
from
the
first time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people out there that never spoke up about their needs, and it just isn't. So I really encourage everyone now. I do think you can shift it, and I do think you can evolve a relationship and in the bedroom.
Yeah.
So I still think it's worth it. Like if yeah, I liked definitely. If I liked somebody, I would have this conversation and see if we could get to a place that we're both having great crazy yeah. pleasure.
Yeah. And also the thought you were mentioning about, oh, I'm taking too much time. I think that's also really bothering a lot of people with vulvas.
Yeah.
That they feel, oh, no, it takes too much time. Huh? And then actually sex educators sometimes are even saying this, which I really dislike.
Mm. What did they say?
Well, that they say, oh, women just take more time. You should, it's really important to take more time with women or girls or I don't know. Because sometimes, yes, it does take more time, but sometimes it doesn't. And it also has to do with how you have sex. Like totally. If you only have penetrative sex, yeah, then it takes a lot of time because most women don't orgasm from that. But if you would go down on someone with a vulva, then maybe she comes in 2 minutes.
Yeah, can depend.
Or they come in 2 minutes. And it also, every body is different.
Yeah.
Every body and every body.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And also it depends on what's going on in your mind.
Yeah.
And Yeah.
I really like that you named those three phases. Like validating your own pleasure, masturbating, maybe looking at your vulva too, and then communicating.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, I think that's great. Yeah, and also communicating, I think you can learn because we don't really learn it in sex education.
Yeah, we don't learn it.
But you can definitely learn.
Yeah, I've definitely improved.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I can imagine that for you, hearing all those stories from your followers and people that you talk to and in your other work, that it also, for you, maybe everything is normal now.
Like to hear about you.
Yeah, to hear about.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Not to do.
Sorry.
No.
Sorry, everything is normal.
That you're not.
I don't try everything, but I'm totally open to talking about things, and I'm just really curious about what people's fantasies are and what their interests are and what makes them feel great. I think also, I mean, I used to think like a blowjob on one person was the same as a blowjob on another person. Like I just assumed. I never asked them either, you know, like, oh, what do you like?
Yeah.
You know, that's something I now do, but you didn't learn that either. You just kind of assumed, okay, they're all the same.
Yeah. Let's just do this and then it works.
Yeah,
because actually, isn't this also the worst thing to say in bed? You have a video about the worst thing to say in bed. What is that?
Yeah, the worst thing to say. Oh, yeah. I had a video where it was that if somebody asks you or says to you, like, tell me what you like, and you just say, oh, you're doing great, like, this is great, that is a missed opportunity because your partner is asking you for feedback. And you are not providing it. And this is a moment. Just say anything. Give them anything that you'd like. Just get comfortable. It's a moment to practice speaking up for what you like. Yeah. And to just dismiss it in a way of like, oh, whatever you like is fine. What are you saying? You're saying that you don't have an opinion or that you don't have a – you know what feels good to you. You know what you want. So start connecting your mind with your body of like, what is it that I would like?
Yeah.
And prioritizing that. Because if you're not prioritizing that, why should they?
No one is. Yeah. 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 And even if you don't know, you can say, oh, it's hard. I don't know. Let's try this a little bit more. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe you could be like, okay, I'm going to think about it and come back to you later.
And then come back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really important. And you also have something that says nobody's bad at sex. How do you look at that?
Yeah.
Because I think actually a lot of people of all genders out there feel like, oh, maybe I'm not good enough, or maybe, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that when you think of, is somebody bad at sex, that's as if they showed up to the show by themselves. So sex is always a dynamic between two or more people, or I guess it could also be one person, but we're talking about two plus experiences.
Yeah.
And it's a dance between two people, and you need to be able to communicate. So again, maybe I think I used to be like, oh, that was a really bad sex. And then I'm like, but did I ever even say what would feel good or what I'd like or even try, you know? And I didn't. I would just blow it off of that being bad sex. But then I didn't give them a chance.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm not saying that every two people are compatible sexually. I'm also, you know, that's just not true. I've had better sexual relationships than I with some people and less good sexual relationships with others. But I do think you have to communicate and talk to each other, and you can evolve and grow and discover each other better over time.
Yeah.
And that you should not just blow somebody off as being bad at sex because you didn't give somebody a shot then.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also the opposite because I also had really good sex mm-hmm. and then I would be so thankful to the other person and then he would say, but Anna, it takes two to tango.
Yeah, I've had like, the same conversation.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, thank you.
I was like, oh my God, you're so amazing. And, and he was like, we're amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
All right, I'm an thank equal you. Participant yeah. in this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is really, yeah, this yeah. is so true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great point.
Yeah. Yeah, I love
yeah,
it.
They didn't just do this to you. Like, you did no, it together. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, sometimes people are really, I mean, it depends on your body. Maybe they're not good with another person. That's mm-hmm. also, mm-hmm. yeah, or with other people. Yeah. I also saw something about the one finger express.
Oh, my God.
And was that really your grandma?
Yeah, it's on my
your...
grandma. Yeah. My grandma is such
a riot.
I love
that your family's also
my family's involved. Very involved. Too involved, maybe.
No, I love it.
My grandma
what
is so funny. The yeah. one finger express.
Yeah, or maybe
or two finger express.
Oh, two, okay.
It's masturbating.
Yeah.
Like the old fashioned way.
Yeah.
Acoustic style.
Yeah.
So my grandma, I came home one day for Thanksgiving and she said, you know, you may draw about sex and masturbation, but we've known about the two finger express for a long time.
So sweet.
Maybe one finger express, but I rock a two finger express.
You rock
personally.
Yeah,
personally.
Me too. Me too. Totally, because that's like masturbating on the outside of your clitoris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One
with
finger.
Two fingers.
Yeah, I like a two finger.
Yeah, I think maybe she said one finger.
I think
maybe
she did.
We like two finger. Maybe
yeah,
it's a generation
gap. Yeah.
Exactly. And so you've been doing this work for quite a while. You've met also other experts in your field. Is there anything you learned that you didn't know about sexuality?
Ooh,
take your time.
About sexuality. I mean, I'm always learning about sexuality. So I'm sure there's millions of things I don't know. I think, well, I don't know, the latest thing that I'm interested in, maybe that's more of a tangent I can take, is I heard Amsterdam speak.
Amsterdam? I don't mm-hmm. know.
Dominatrix
okay, cool.
in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And I think it really inspired me. I'm not the most dominant person, but it got me very curious in this role that you can play and mm-hmm. how empowering it can be. And I also, what I loved, it's something that I wouldn't say is new to me, but I loved them reiterating it, which was that it's also a kind act to do for somebody. So people mm-hmm. view this like a dominatrix BDSM lifestyle as like being able to offer that to somebody who feels relief or release in some way. It's actually a really amazing thing to be able to offer to somebody. So I really liked looking at it that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will also put them in the show notes.
Yeah.
So people can
find Amsterdam.
Amsterdam, their account or website. Mm-hmm. Sounds really interesting. I also learned something about BDSM in my work the other day, and I think we can learn so much about consent from it too, and about communicating. Because that's, I think, something that a lot of heterosexual sex or people do not do.
Totally. I think the kink community does it so well, like if done properly, but in terms of boundaries, consent, parameters, what they're open for, like intention setting.
Yeah.
I think it's so...
Yeah, and also
important.
Keep checking on each other and all those things. I think I know. I also started listening to a podcast. It's called Meet the Kingsters.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I don't know if it's in Dutch. Actually, I forgot if it's in Dutch or in English. But I got it from a friend, and it's really interesting. I haven't listened to many episodes, but that's also about BDSM. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I'm curious about it.
Because you actually speak Dutch too.
I can listen. I can do my best.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think. I got a little bit better at kind of to that point. Sometimes people ask me things like, oh, my wife doesn't like dirty talk, but I really like it. What should I do? And then it's like people don't really understand what their desires mean or why they have them. So I also think it's important to think about it. So I was asking this person like, okay, why do you like dirty talk? Is it because you like to be validated verbally, know, like, oh, like, what do you want to hear? What kind of dirty talk do you want to hear? Like that you're doing a good job? Or is it that you want to be felt a bit submissive to the person? Like, so to get a bit more clear on what it is out of a desire that you actually want instead of just saying you know, why do you want to be dominated, for instance? Yeah. Is it because you want to relinquish control? Is it because you get turned on with the power play? I think there's so many different reasons. So I think it's really cool to investigate those desires and understand what they really mean for you.
Yeah. I think this is really good advice too. Like what is in the desire that you actually desire?
Yeah. Because I think that's also where these things go wrong. People are like, oh, I want to be... And that's where, again, the kink community does it really well. Like, what do you mean? How do you want to feel?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And then one word can mean something totally different to someone else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, really interesting. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe other things that you think of that you would wish everyone would know. Is there something?
Yeah. I think, of course. I think that... sex is, or pleasure is, a spectrum. It's like a rabbit hole, and you are Alice. And I think we should all be going down that rabbit hole, and that there's so many different layers and things to experience. And, you know, people get into ruts, but there's so many different things that you can explore if you're just curious to investigate it. So I think that's really exciting to me.
Yeah.
And so that's like, just stay curious about your own pleasure and about your partner's pleasure. And you don't need to do the same old thing every time. You can switch it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And be curious about each other too. Eh? Yeah. So, okay. This is, I love it. There's already lots of advice in this. I also would like to talk about dating a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, I mean, not you personally, but more as in the dating scene. What do you think, what has been going on the last couple of, or what is very typical for this time in dating?
I think a lot of burnout, or like dating fatigue, I notice.
You hear about it.
Yeah, you hear about it a lot. Yeah. So I think, and now you start to kind of see a resurgence of old-fashioned ways, or I feel like this past year I've had way more in real life interactions with people.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's because I'm putting myself in more situations where that can happen, or if it's because people are just more open after COVID to like having a chat. You also start to see like different events pop up for singles, like local events to get people off the apps. So that's a bit of a trend that I've been seeing. And then what have I been noticing? I don't know. I'm casually on the apps at the moment, but I haven't gone on a date from them in a while.
Do you have favorite apps, or do you
I look on, it depends, Bumble and Hinge. Probably Bumble more, and then I use Field if I'm in a more open-minded space. I love Field as well.
You also worked with them, though.
No? I worked with them as well. Cool. Did a collaboration.
Really cool. And what do you think is so good on the apps? Like, what does make an app good for dating?
Well, I think you meet people that you otherwise wouldn't. You know, I don't think I would have necessarily met my exes in the wild. So that's really nice that you get exposed to new people. I think it's just, think you have to be on them in the right time and with the right state of mind, or else then I think they're pointless. You really, I think, have to be in a space where you're excited to go out and mingle and meet people. Then I think the apps can be really fun.
If you want to be out there, then they're a lot of fun. I'm not on apps right now, but I think it's also interesting that there's apps that are more focused on the the vulva owner, or the women should speak first, and how that is also in equality and inequality. And
all the Bumbles changed it now, so
they did.
So men can speak first.
Oh, really? Yeah. So now anyone can speak first.
So now it's basically a normal app.
And why is that? Do you know?
I'm not sure. They the owner sold it, I think, the woman that founded it. So I think things have changed.
Yeah, that's also interesting, always to look at who owns it, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Because sometimes it's just an old man somewhere. and it's not... I was thinking about, let's talk a little bit about E&M, ethical non-monogamy, because that's something that's a bit bigger, I think, in the U.S.
In the U.S.?
Yeah, don't you think?
Oh, it's maybe so funny. In New York? I think of it as bigger here. But that's just because I live here.
Oh, maybe it is.
When it became bigger. No, I'm sure it's also bigger. I'm sure it's a... Because I bet in like San Francisco and in New York, it's also bigger in these cities. But most of the people I know who practice E&M are European.
Ah, funny.
Or live in Europe.
So, okay, first, what is E&M?
Ethical non-monogamy.
Yeah, and can you explain how does it work?
Or I can explain what my interpretation is. I'm not, and by no means an E&M expert.
No.
But it means that there can be many different things. So it could be anything like an open relationship to polyamory. I think it can also be engaging in play with your partner and other people.
Yeah.
So I guess, would swinging be considered E&M?
I think so. I think it's maybe kind of an umbrella.
Yeah, E&M is the umbrella for like all different types of non-monogamy situations, but that are agreed upon by all parties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why do you think that's really a thing now? Do you have, or do you have an opinion on that? Or
I think that in general, when it comes to sexuality, I think it's always been a thing.
Yeah.
I think now it's becoming more of a mainstream spoken about thing, but I believe that there's been these kind of communities always. I think it's people questioning the status quo and starting to think, okay, what is the relationship that I want or that works for me, not just what is the path of, you know, finding a partner, getting married to that partner, having two children and a house. So I think it kind of goes hand in hand with kind of challenging these social norms.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I actually really like that now about dating, that you can create that with somebody together.
Yeah, that you can create your own relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, certain people are very set. Like, I don't think you would necessarily go to a polyamorous person and say, let's create a monogamous relationship together. But I like that it's a discussion that I like to view it as a discussion as opposed to something that's set.
Yeah, me too. I think I also would advise anyone who's getting into a relationship now, discuss these things.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
And make it a conversation from the start.
From the start, exactly. I think that's so... And then all these discussions are way easier later.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody said to me, they were like, oh, I feel like if you were to date somebody, you'd be really cool about them like wanting to open it up. And I'm like, yeah, but okay. I don't know. Were we just monogamous for years? And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, they're like, so how do you feel about open relationships? Yeah. I don't know if I'd be so immediately like, that's great. But I think if you are dating somebody and you start dialogues and set these things up from the groundwork when it's nothing to do with your relationship, when it's just about how people view life in general, I think then it's really interesting.
Very, yeah. Yeah, and it's probably also funny with your line of work that people think you're like really open to everything, but you also are a person next to your work.
So it
doesn't necessarily say anything about your own preferences or openness.
Now I'm also thinking, what other things should I be bringing up on first dates? Like, so financial, like what are other things that are difficult to bring up? You know, like, so like, what are your thoughts on finances?
Yeah, I think maybe finance, but I would also say maybe your family-in-law. Like, because I think there are so many things that we kind of immediately think, okay, you will be monogamous, you will live together, you will have kids, you will get married, you will always go for Christmas to your family-in-law. You will be always, when you're sort of able to it, you will be both at the same party. You know, all those things are sort of expected.
Yeah, yeah.
But why wouldn't you just open it up and say, okay, so how do you feel about living together?
Yeah.
Or, finances. It's actually really good.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to have to write down a list of like all the things like that I'm not so good at bringing up in the beginning.
This is so funny. On your first date. So do you want to have a shared bank account?
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
Just things that maybe are easier to bring up earlier than later with no stress, no high level, high stress situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, I think also things are a spectrum and things change.
Of course.
As you were saying, same with pleasure, but also with relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe now you want this, but maybe in a few years you have another preference.
Yeah, I think like when I met my last partner, I had just decided I was in my sexual curiosity era.
Yeah.
So I remember we had started dating, but I had already gotten tickets to the sex party.
Yeah.
And I remember I was going to be like, I'm going with or without you.
Yeah,
like,
I'm going.
It's my journey.
Yeah.
And this year, I still love those kind of parties, but I'm also a little less, like, at that time, it was such a big thing to me to be able to go and my independence. So it's these things also change, come in waves.
And maybe for people that have never heard about sex parties, what is it? And I mean, of course, there's a lot of different ones, but maybe for people that really hear about this the first time.
I made a Substack article about it so people can read about it. But I've since been to a few, and I recommend looking into the ones you go to. So one my ex-partner and I went to, and we had a great time, but it wasn't the sexiest party, I would say. There were way too many men to women ratio, and it wasn't curated well enough. But we had a really great time. We both looked amazing. And and like, it was also fun because we had the discussion, you know, going into it. We set intentions, like, what do you want out of it?
So also communicating.
Yeah, communication was amazing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the same
connecting. Connecting. I was looking for that word. It's also really connecting.
Yeah. And it's the same thing because it's like, at first you're like, oh, okay, let's go to the sex party. And then, but if you don't communicate what that means, like, what do you want? Like, it could also just be a recon mission. It could be, okay, no, maybe we're interested in play or only with each other, or we'd like to involve somebody, or I really want to watch you with somebody. Like, I think those things in the beginning is better than ending up there and then somebody's upset because something happened or expectations are misaligned. But that wasn't the sexiest. We brought the sexy part, but the party wasn't that sexy. And then I've since been to other ones which were way better curated. And in the end, I haven't I didn't have sex with anyone in the sex party. So you can also just go and have a great time.
And be there.
You don't have to have sex with anyone,
Yeah. Nice. So we'll put your Substack also, of course, your website you also in the show notes, but also the Substack so people can subscribe.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, let's see. Yeah, first, of course, this podcast is named The Sex Ed You Wish You'd Had. And looking at where we what we talked about now today, what do you think would be... Yeah, it would make it better. What do you think is really necessary in sex education?
I think what you said, that even in sex education, people don't learn how to communicate. So I think if we could add, obviously, it's the, you know, teaching about pleasure, not fear-mongering on STDs. You know, so many people have herpes. We don't need to scare children about it. So... pleasure, but also the communication part of it. I think that would also help, how to communicate your needs or what you like with somebody. But maybe that's too many steps ahead. Maybe we just got to get the basics.
No, I think this is great. Let's be idealistic and just go reach for, for a goal. Yeah, I think that's great. And do you have any recommendations where you feel like, well, everyone should watch this or read this book or follow this account? Or
I liked She Comes First. I really like the book. For those struggling with dating, I liked the book Attached, about different attachment theory.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great book on ethical non-monogamy, but I can't. Oh, Designer Relationships, like.
Yeah,
that was a really good
and
book.
And I've also heard on the table Ethical Sluts.
I know, I'd never read that. That
no,
looks so good.
It's really good.
Yeah,
really
I saw
yeah,
it on the
table. Really good. Yeah.
So I'll have to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can borrow it.
And then for accounts, just ones that I love in general. I love The Love Drive. I love Jillian Turecki for relationships, Dating Intentionally for relationships. For sexuality, there's Sex with Alexa. For polyamory, there is Polyphilia blog.
Yeah, that's really nice too.
So a lot of resources out there.
Yeah.
Just stalk who I follow on Instagram and you'll find some.
Yeah, that's a really good one. And any last words? Anything that you will put out there in the world?
Go fuck yourself.
Great. Yeah. Jessica, thank you so much
for
coming.
You.
I really enjoyed
it. This is so nice. Thank you
so
for having me.
Dit was de voorlopig laatste aflevering van Thanks for Coming. Zin in meer? Ik wel. Schrijf je in voor de Sekswijzer nieuwsbrief, volg de socials en stay tuned. En deel deze podcast met al je vrienden, like en subscribe en geef lekker veel sterretjes.